Does Mr. Bradford get rebuttal?
It depends. It depends. We'll see. He may want to contradict himself. We may have to call in the marshal to break up a fight if it comes to blows.
Do you want an opponent?
Mick, I'm happy to argue against it.
All right.
Yeah. Well, our last argument today will be in the matter of Bjerke versus Flomo. Counsel, I hope you don't leave with a complex, since the courtroom is emptied and not even your opposing counsel would appear today. So, but we'll hear your argument on appeal. You won't be given time for rebuttal again, unless you really want to contradict yourself. But we have your briefing in the matter, and you have 15 minutes to present your case on behalf of your client on appeal. You may proceed whenever you're ready.
Please state your
name with your argument.
Thank you, Judge Ross, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Bradford with the Bassford Remley Law Firm on behalf of the appellant, Jenna Marie Bjerke.
So I'm just gonna cut to the chase. We've read your brief, and you asked that we publish. What would your syllabus point be?
Our syllabus point would be that repeated incidents of harassment under the statute include the district court in determining whether repeated incidents have occurred should consider several things. Number one is the temporal proximity. Were they concurrent? So the term repeated has a connotation of a sequence, not simultaneous behavior. So if I say, I'm going to get you and I do this at the same time, that's probably not repeated. Repeated is more than one incident. And then the statute provides for a method of delivery in very different ways: words, gestures, acts. So if there are more than one series of words, if there are more than one series of acts, if there are more than one series of gestures, or any combination of those, the district court under the statute should find that harassment has occurred. And I want to point out, and by the way, I should apologize to the court at the outset, we correctly cited the statute on page 11 of our brief to include repeated incidents, and then in the body of our brief, we refer to it as multiple incidents. That was an inadvertent oversight, and I'm embarrassed by that, and I apologize to the court. It certainly wasn't intentional, but it does not alter the analysis. The other thing I want to make clear is we are not challenging the findings of fact, and those findings of fact that are of importance here are on addendum pages 3 and 4 in paragraphs 13 and 14, where the district court found that respondent entered Ms. Bjerke's car without her permission, stayed there after a request to leave. The referee referred to it as a standoff that lasted 5 minutes. The referee found that the respondent called Ms. Bjerke 50 times. The referee found that he sent a long series of text messages beginning on October 25th and going into October 26th. In finding of fact number 14, the referee even uses the statutory language when he says, respondent also made repeated threats to come to petitioner's home. So what we're asking the court to do is simply take the undisputed findings of fact and apply them to a proper interpretation of the statute.
Threats to come to her home, but not threats to do her harm there. I think that's, if I read the referee's approach to that circumstance correct, it was he's threatening to show up at her home, but there's no reason for her to fear for her safety, and in fact, he doesn't go to the home, and he, for some period of time, didn't communicate further about it at that time. Am I correct in the referee's assessment of that circumstance?
I think for the most part, you are. I would qualify it by saying this, Judge Ross, is the referee found that the total universe of the acts, which includes the threats to go to the home, constitute harassment. Because it's not just fear for safety, which this was, but there's also a privacy interest implicit in the statute as well. And if you're going to violate somebody's privacy if you continually threaten to go to their home. But the basis for the referee's conclusion of law, in my view, as I read the order, was not that she was not in fear. There's a finding of fact that says she was in fear. It's that this was one continuous single incident, and that's the portion of the statute that
the home incident, the going to her home incident. The district court found, or the referee found, that that was harassment.
Correct. Well, the referee described all of the incidents. He basically said that the October 25th incidents are different in form and quality than the previous incidents in September and July. And he basically said, as a whole, those constitute harassment under the statute, but he declined to order, he declined to issue a harassment restraining order, finding that that's a single incident of harassment.
Well, he found, I'm looking at conclusions of law on page 6 of your addendum.
Right.
So he found that the July incident are unpleasant to petitioner, not acts of harassment as defined by law. September also not harassment as defined by law. And then he focuses on the October 25th sequence of events. And I think you're saying his conclusions of law are wrong.
Right.
Repeated can happen in the course of 24 hours.
Correct. So in conclusion of law number 8, which is the description of the October 25th incident, which the findings of fact indicate also went into October 26th. There were two text messages on the morning of October 26th as well. But the critical finding in number 8 is respondent entered petitioner's car against her will, remained there despite her request to leave, and then repeatedly threatened to go to her house until his demands were met. And then the referee says this conduct as a whole had a reasonable and substantial adverse effect, meeting the criteria in the statute. So really the only question is under the statute, should those findings that the district court, the referee made, do those qualify? Are those single incidents or are those repeated incidents? And our view is, applying the undisputed facts, the findings of fact in paragraphs 13 to 14, it has to be repeated acts. There's more than one.
So if I understand your argument now, I think it's more clear to me. You're saying you're not challenging the district court or the referee's decision that the text messaging in July were not acts of harassment. You're saying you can credit that conclusion, okay, and still reversal is necessary because the October sequence of events were multiple harassment acts, not just one. Is that
That's
the
correct.
Gist of your argument?
Correct.
So if we agree with you, would you agree that the remedy would be to remand for the court to consider whether to grant a harassment restraining order in light of the proper treatment as multiple rather than singular?
I would not agree remand is necessary because there wouldn't need to be any further fact-finding.
So with the district, you're saying the district court is mandated if there's acts of harassment, the district court must issue a harassment restraining order? There's no discretion?
If there are multiple acts of harassment, so if there's a finding that there are multiple acts and there is the required finding that they had a substantially adverse impact on the victim, which there is that finding, then yes, there is no discretion to deny a harassment restraining order. It's simply a matter of applying the statute. And there's a couple other reasons that I want to point out as to why this decision is erroneous under the law. We pointed out one in our brief, which is that it sets a very bad public policy precedent in the sense that once you start harassing someone in the morning, you can keep harassing them with impunity, and it may be viewed as simply a continuation of the same event. But
I'm just trying to get. So, are you suggesting that a district court would be prohibited from framing an incident that has multiple communications as a single act? There's no discretion in the district court in
well,
that regard.
Well, I think that there may be a case where there is some gray area. For example, if I send you two sequential emails within 30 seconds of each other, is that enough to satisfy the statute? That's the kind of stuff of fact-finding. Whatever gray area there may be, this case is not in it.
I mean, the district court seems to be saying there was one goal here, which was I'm going to come to your house and we're going to get this squared away, yada, yada, yada. And all of the communication was about that concern, And therefore, the court treated it, or the referee treated it as one.
Right, and that's the second point I wanted to get to, Judge Ross, of why this is error. Because if you look at the court's published decision in Kush versus Matheson, which we cited in our brief, it's a 2004 decision, and the court was very clear in that case that the question before the district court on a harassment restraining order is not why the respondent conducted himself in the manner that he did, but whether his acts were intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the petitioner. And here, what the district court did is to say, this guy was really mad about something this particular day, and that's why he did these multiple acts. And because he was acting pursuant to that singular objective, it is one incident. He's focusing on why the conduct was occurring, not the nature of the acts. And the acts, again, were very discreet. He started sending text messages in the afternoon of October 25th, one incident. When she picked up the child, he came into the car, different act temporally, different act qualitatively. He then, when she left, when she fled after locking the car, he started incessantly calling her phone, another act. He started sending her text messages, another act. And then you have an intervening night, and he wakes up the next morning and starts texting her again, expressly saying, this is going to happen every single day until you talk to me. And the next Monday, she files a petition for harassment restraining order. So what is a victim supposed to do in that situation? Are they going to wait until the harassment escalates, or are they supposed to wait another 24 hours and see if another discreet act occurs?
Mr. Bradford, can I
yes.
follow back up on the syllabus point question that was asked at the beginning? One of the areas where we deal with this fairly regularly is the criminal law, same behavioral incident, whether to have multiple sentences. We're talking temporal and multiple events. My question is, number one, if you're familiar with that standard, do you believe that your description that you gave at the beginning of the answer would survive that? Or to say another way, would that be a useful analysis for us to use?
I have to confess, I've been involved in one criminal case in my life. It was a pro bono matter. It was a habeas matter, and after reading the habeas statute, I decided that's not something I'd probably ever do again.
I take it you didn't win that case.
It's actually still up at the Eighth Circuit, but I've made a commitment to myself. So I don't know that I'm informed enough to answer how a decision in this case might apply to a criminal case where there are elements in mens rea.
But you did mention the temporal by the words of the statute, so you believe there's at least fairly explicitly by that, a time element in terms of looking at it. So that's why you referenced 30 seconds versus, in this case, we're within a 24-hour period.
Well, the statute uses the word repeated. And to me, the common definition of repeated is sequential. So there is more than one event that follows sequentially, not contemporaneously.
So two text messages, repeated?
I think under the plain language of the statute, it would be. And if you recall, the old version of the statute, before it was amended, allowed a harassment restraining order based on one incident of harassment. And then it was changed, and the legislature, I think, basically said, we don't want to referee disputes every time there is, you know, one person who utters something that they probably shouldn't have. But when the nature of the actions are repeated, and again, two text messages, I think under the plain language of the statute is repeated, but if there is some gray area, again, this case certainly isn't in it, which is why I don't think a remand is necessary, because what would the referee do on remand if the court determines as a matter of the statute that the interpretation of the law is such that as long as there are multiple incidents or multiple acts or multiple gestures, and the court has already found that there's really nothing to do on remand.
Well, it'd be hard because it's almost, it's 9 months ago.
Correct. I don't know if the...
That was kind of the question I was going to ask, and this maybe goes to Judge Rush's question, too. The point being is you get the sense the referee understood and even made a point. I thought I saw there that there was no further contact. He was taking into account kind of the history of their separation and custody and things like that. So you got the impression, without seeing it, that the judge felt that notwithstanding, even if he had concluded it was repeated, a harassment order was no longer needed. But your answer to Judge Ross is that the court has no discretion. If there is repeated incidents, there is no discretion at that stage. One must be ordered.
Right. The fact that he didn't show up at her house, as he repeatedly threatened to do, might salvage him from a different kind of restraining order, one that would preclude any sort of physical contact, but it doesn't protect him from a harassment restraining order. It's not a defense to say, I know I engaged in multiple acts that were intended to intimidate you and threaten you and challenge your safety, but because I didn't act on them, they're not acts of harassment under the statute. The statutory language leaves no room for that.
Does the district court have discretion as to the scope and extent of the harassment restraining order?
In terms of the duration or in terms of what is precluded?
Yes.
I believe so.
So a remand would be necessary for that? I mean, we wouldn't decide in this court if we agreed with your argument as to grant all of the relief that was sought.
So what I'm thinking about, Your Honor, is, and I'd have to review the statute before I give an absolute response, but what I'm thinking of, my experience in some of these cases that we handle on a pro bono basis are the physical restraining orders. And I know that there is some discretion with respect to the duration, and in extreme circumstances, I think they can be up to 50 years. I don't know if that same law applies to the harassment restraining order statute, so I don't want to answer that absolutely because I just don't know. May I point out one last thing?
Quickly, yes.
This can be my rebuttal. I do want to note that on May 20th, 2019, there was a decision issued by this court, so this was after briefing in the case, in Peterson versus Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R. It's an unpublished decision, so obviously it's not precedential, but what's important about it is that this court affirmed a district court's conclusion that harassment had occurred because text messages were shared over the course of 2 days, which is what we have here.
Just one last question. What length of time did you ask for the order to be in place?
I believe it was 1 year. Thank you for affording me the opportunity to present our oral argument.
Thank you. And thank you for your argument and your briefing in this matter. This is the last of our oral calendar. And therefore, we are in recess.
Thank you, too, for your pro bono service.
Yeah, thanks, Judge.
All right.